Hello, I'm Will Shires, and this is Talking Trucks. If, like me, you thought tyres were round, black, and a bit boring, then think again. In this fascinating podcast, Guy Haywood, who's Vice President of Sales, Marketing, and Business Strategy at Hankook Tyre Europe, easily convinces me otherwise. Like the rest of the industry, truck tyres are undergoing technological changes at a phenomenal rate, and Guy reveals all. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to stay abreast with everything that's happening in this industry, then why not subscribe to Commercial Motor Magazine weekly? For great deals, head over to www.com-mot.com. Guy, thank you very much for joining me.
That's okay.
Now, tell me, when I look at advances in truck technology over the last 10 or 20 years, things have moved at an incredible pace. But what about tyres? From where I'm sitting, they're pretty much the same, black and round, right? Unless you can tell me otherwise.
I think you're right, actually. I mean, first of all, figuratively, you're definitely right, because they are still black and round, and they always have been. And if we even look back to John Boyd Dunlop, who was the first designer of the radial tyre back in 1888, it was black and round. The reality is, over the last 130 years since that first pneumatic tyre, it's been a pretty steady development and evolution of tyres in cars and also in trucks. The last major innovation, you could say, would probably radialisation, which was about 1940, so that was 70 years ago now, or even more than 70 years ago. So we haven't seen a huge amount of innovation, and if you were buying a tyre that was launched perhaps 10 years before, it's probably not that dissimilar to the tyres, the latest generation of tyres that were in the marketplace. And that was very true for most of my career. Today, I'd have to say that we've changed. We're now moving into a period where we're seeing much more revolution than evolution, and I would predict that the tyre technologies that you're going to see entering the market will move and change more in the next 5 years than probably we've seen in the last 25 to 30 years. And there's a whole lot of driving forces and enabling forces, really, that sort of making that happen. We've got a driving force of sustainability. We've got the decarbonisation of the mobility industry, and then we've got some technologies which I'll talk about in more detail later, I'm sure, which are making it possible for us to produce tyres and design tyres today that are significantly better than the previous generation, not by 1 or 2%, but by as much as 20%. So it's certainly a period of revolution, not evolution, right now.
Yeah, that's incredible. So when you spoke at Road Transport Expo, you went into a bit of detail about different sensors, didn't you? So can you talk us through those? Where are we with? Because there's load sensors, wear sensors, mm-hmm. and even road condition sensors coming. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, this is another, what you might call, a battleground that's happening now with all the tyre manufacturers. You can imagine a future, and it's coming pretty quickly, where we've got EV cars and EV trucks as the main vehicles on the road. And beyond that, we're going to start to see a significant increase in the autonomy level of those cars and going towards full autonomy. Certainly within the next 10 years, I would suggest we'll have autonomous vehicles. When you think about those autonomous vehicles and those EV vehicles, the only product that actually touches the road is the tyre. That means that there's nobody actually looking through the windscreen of the vehicle either, because there's no driver. Today, we're looking at the windscreen, we're looking at the road conditions, we're checking out if it's wet today, we'll moderate our speed, if it's muddy roads, or if your tyre conditions, your tread depths are slightly lower, you'll make micro adjustments to the way that you drive, because you're observing all of that stuff. In the future, there's nobody driving the car. We're sitting in the back, maybe with a pizza, and it's going to be the tyres that are going to be giving all the information to the vehicle itself. Wear condition sensors are the ones that are going to tell you you've got illegal tyres, or you're getting close to illegal tyres, or you've only got 3 millimetres left, so you can't go quite as fast in wet conditions as you might do if you had 7 millimetres. The road condition sensors are the ones that are going to be able to say the actual road conditions today are wet, they're icy, they're muddy, there's a hole, the grip level is not what it was yesterday, or the grip level on this particular surface is worse than it was 5 kilometres up the road. So you need to adjust the speed of this autonomous vehicle, because you will not safely pass this corner at 70 kilometres an hour today, it's going to be 63. All that data is coming off the tyre, and all that data will be fed into the algorithm for the vehicle to be able to make those adjustments, because we're no longer making those adjustments. So we're seeing sensors already. We have RFID, We have tire pressure monitoring and temperature monitoring sensors. The next evolution will be sensors that will give you the tread depth condition of the tires. Quite quickly after that, we'll start to see sensors that are actually monitoring the grip and monitoring the load on the tire. And then the final iteration is the road condition sensing. All of that really has to be a reality before we move to autonomous vehicles, because there's no other way of doing it. Autonomy today, I mean, there's no way that the autonomous vehicles that's being tested today on the roads have an understanding of the road condition. They've cameras that can see the furniture on the road, the people on the road, the other cars on the road, but they're not monitoring the road condition. It's got to be the tyres that do that. So when those autonomous vehicles become a norm, the tyres on that vehicle will have sensors which are monitoring the road. And that's the new battleground that we're all working towards in Hankook and also a number of the other premium manufacturers.
Yeah, that's amazing. That hadn't even occurred to me. What about actual tyre design? How is that changing?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned briefly there are some quite sizable evolutions happening right now in the industry. We've got huge drivers to try and improve the performance of our tyres. We've got a big push generally for sustainability. We've got a big push to try and deliver better performing tyres to support the transport industry. And then in parallel with that, we've got this new generation of EV vehicles, etc., which have got different tyre requirements. So there's an awful lot of eyeballs and a lot of driving forces saying you need to produce better and better and better tyres. Historically, as I mentioned, tyres weren't getting much better. They'd be pretty much the same tyre, even if you bought it 10 years later in terms of technology. But because of the advances, particularly in three key technologies, today you can produce a tyre that was probably impossible to produce 2 years ago. And that's the kind of time frame we're talking about. And there are three key technologies that really are accelerating. The first one is material science. Because we're all aiming for 100% sustainability, and Hankook's objective is by 2050, we will be 100% sustainable in all the materials in our tyres. That means we have to replace around 65% of the petrochemical derived products in the tyres in the next few years until we get to 2050. And that's quite a challenge. We want to replace them with materials that are sustainable, but also deliver better performance criteria, because we want to deliver better performance. So there's a huge material science research projects happening within our company today, and we're using new materials in every new generation of tyre. That's one area of opportunity and innovation. The second one, which is a real enabling technology, is the reduction in the cost of processing power. Today you can buy a supercomputer powered device that's probably $1,000 that would have cost you probably $1 million only 5 years ago. That means that we can have things like AI, which can do huge processing at low cost. ChatGPT is using that same process. We're using AI, supercomputers, cloud-based analysis to be able to digitally design tyres. That means we digitally design the tyre, we digitally produce a digital tyre, we don't make a real tyre, and then we can test that digital tyre in a digital environment. And the reason why that's interesting and important is if you do it digitally, it means you can make changes very quickly. You can make a modification to the tyre design digitally. You can test it on a digital tyre in a digital environment and get an answer within minutes. Historically, you'd have to make a real tyre and test it on a real vehicle, and that can take 6 months to find out whether the modification you made to the design was good or bad. So now we can make multiple modifications, test them, and optimise tyre design much, much quicker. Then the third technology is around 3D printing. We're now 3D printing all of our latest generation of truck and bus tyres here in the European market, and they're being produced by 3D metal printed moulds. That means we can have really intricate, detailed tread patterns, which were impossible previously with normal mould making processes. And we can digitally design whatever tread pattern you like and actually produce that with 3D. So we've got regenerating tread patterns in all of our latest generation products. So, like I said, it's been an evolutionary process in tyre design for a very long time. Today, we've got a situation where a two-year-old tyre, if it was launched more than 2 years old, is very, very old. It's probably more like the mobile telephone industry today than the tyre industry. You know, and I couldn't sell you an iPhone 1 or iPhone 2 or a Nokia. People want iPhone 15. And I think the way that this business is going is that the marketplace is going to be demanding more and more technology, and it's going to be the people that can deliver an iPhone 15 and then the iPhone 16 in 2 or 3 years, the ones that are actually going to win. So that's why we're investing so much in those technologies.
I see. Yeah, another thing you touched on at Road Transport Expo was was tyres as a service. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, the tyres as a service isn't a new concept, really. I know in the UK market particularly, we've been talking about tyres as a service as an industry for probably about 40 or 50 years, because there are a number of fleets, I'm sure, that will be listening to this that are already operating tyres as a service contracts with the major manufacturers. And this is where they're buying not tyres, they're not buying services, they're paying effectively for mileage on the vehicle. So they use the vehicle, they pay a certain fee per kilometre used. And it's the manufacturer that manages the tyres, manages all of the servicing. And if they're not using the vehicle, they're not actually paying any money to the manufacturer. That's a tyres as a service type contract. But certainly with all of the technologies around sensors that are coming and the evolution of the vehicles themselves, we're going to see a lot more functionality added to those tyres as a service contracts, where we're going to see tyre pressure monitoring added as a part of the service. You're going to see driver behaviour analysis added as part of the service, route optimization, geolocalization. You're going to see road condition monitoring added as part of that service. And you're going to see people like Hankook offering tyres, plus all of these sensors, plus all of the data and actionable reporting, which means that they can have a much bigger influence on the overall costs of the fleet partners that they're working with. And that's what tyres as a service will mean as we go forward, and that's going to be unlocked by a lot of technology and a lot of sensors, as I mentioned previously.
Okay. Now, going back to the advances, actual the design of tyres, you were saying, you know, the last couple of years has just been phenomenal. Mm. So what are we talking? Better wear, better fuel efficiency, better wet grip, the whole lot?
Yes, I mean, that's the good news, is that when you look at the traditional spider diagram, you're looking at about six different criteria for tyre performance. And the new technologies, when you combine those three technologies together, materials, AI design and 3D printing, you can make up to 20% improvement in performance, which is unheard of. I mean, previously, throughout the last 100 years or so, you'd see new generations of tyres being launched into the market, and the new generation might claim to have 1 or 2% improvement in mileage and 2 or 3% improvement in rolling resistance or fuel efficiency and a 1% improvement in wet grip. Now we're talking about 20% improvement in mileage, 20% improvement in stopping distance, 20% improvement in fuel efficiency, 20% improvement in retreadability. It's a huge step change in terms of the possible performance improvement, and it's because of the availability of those technologies, which, as I said, were not possible even as little as 2 years ago. So this is why Hankook have invested in that, and now we're in the process of renewing every single tyre that we sell in the European market. So we've launched a new regional tyre last year, we've just launched a new long haul tyre, we're launching a hybrid between regional and long haul last month, we're launching a new range of EV tyres, which I'm sure we'll get onto at the Solutrans show next month. Our game is that 90-95% of everything we sell in Europe by the end of April next year will be latest generation product, launched less than probably 1.5-2 years ago, using all of these technologies. So it's a completely new game now in terms of our tyre performance.
So when you're talking about 20% improvements, presumably that's when the tyre is brand new, and that's what gives it its A grade. What about when it's worn?
That's a brilliant question, actually. I mean, there's an awful lot of discussion around the industry today. The new labelling process, which has been in the marketplace for quite some time now, was definitely a step in the right direction. I have to say, as a manufacturer, and particularly in Hankook's view, is that the mileage is missing off the label, and that's an omission that we really would like to be corrected. But the other big issue that we have with the labelling is that it's only actually showing you the performance of the tyre when it's in its new condition. As I mentioned before, we've got a new regional product, which has got all those technologies inside. That product is graded as a B-rated wet grip when it's in its new condition, as all of the other premium manufacturers are actually graded B-rated. The key thing with the 3D printed tread molds is that you can actually have what's called regenerating tread patterns. That means you've got features which are molded into the tire, which are invisible when it's in its new condition. You've got holes, you've got grooves, you've got notches, you've got interlocking shapes, which you can't see in the new tyre. So as a layman, you'd look at the tyre and it looks very, very traditional. What actually happens, though, as that tyre is wearing, is you see these features appearing, which means that you get much better traction, you get much better wet grip. You're actually cooling the tyre as well while it's being used, which means you get better fuel efficiency and better mileage. But then when it's in its fully worn condition, when you've got 2 or 3 millimetres of tread left, you've actually got new channels that appear in the tyre, because they were 3D printed into it. And that means that those channels do give you the water evacuation, they give you the grip. So late in the tire's life, the wet grip performance is very similar to what it was when it was new. And that, I have to say, is not the case for the vast majority of the tires in the European market, because they're not yet using 3D printed tread technologies. So our objective is really to give huge gains in performance, give everybody the access to the latest technology product, give benchmark performance from when the tires are new, but also make sure that benchmark performance lasts throughout the whole life of the tire. And to do that is a very, very significant technical challenge, and that involves a lot of investment, a lot of research and development, which is what we've been busy with for the last 5 years that I've been working here with Hankook. So yeah, it's a great question, and I would definitely lobby, and I know there's probably one other manufacturer in Europe that have got a similar view, for used tyre labelling. So you might see in the future where it's a category B new, and it could be category D wet grip when it's fully worn if it hasn't got the regenerative tread pattern. I would hope that ours would be BB, B new, B worn, and that would hopefully help the consumer to understand that it is going to have regenerative tread features.
Okay, so tyre manufacturers are clearly doing a lot. What about hauliers themselves? Are they doing enough to help themselves? Should they be investing more in low rolling resistance tyres and regrooving?
I think I've been in this industry now for almost 30 years, and I have to say that we are failing as an industry in terms of educating and convincing an awful lot of the haulage fleet customers and partners that we've engaged with over the last 20 years to explain the benefits of all of these quite simple technologies. I was actually at the Fleet Sustainability Conference yesterday in London with Vaculub and quite a few other industry people. And we made this point there. I mean, we're all being intoxicated by this, what I call erotica, eroteca. It's all of the EVs and the hydrogen and all this dialogue that's going on in the marketplace about these are going to be the panacea that are going to decarbonize and improve our haulage industry. And eventually that probably will be the case. But the reality is we're not going to see full decarbonization of EV vehicles or any alternatives by 2055. So we've got 35 years of diesel vehicles on the road, 35 years of traditional tyres on the road. And that means that we really do have to do a much better job at getting all the value out of the tyres that the fleets are using today. And if I use an analogy, I was reading somewhere recently about a new wine from a guy called Michel Rollier, and he's producing a wine from grapes from all of the continents in the world, and he's combining them, and he thinks he's produced this fantastic wine, which you get reasonable reviews. It's €500 a bottle. Now, if you had that €500 bottle of wine, would you leave 40% of it in the bottle and walk away from the table? Absolutely not. I mean, anybody in the right mind would drain every ounce of wine out of that bottle. Now, if I said to you that on average in Europe, and I'm covering a lot of countries in Europe these days, I find that fleets are leaving 40% of the wine in the bottle all the time.
Wow.
And that 40% means, if we talk about wine, a €500 bottle of wine is similar to a €500 premium tyre. You're buying a €500 premium tyre, they're not re-grooving it, they're not retreading it, they're not managing the pressure of that tyre, and they're removing it from the vehicle probably at 5 or 6 millimetres average. That's throwing away an awful lot of wine. When we design tyres and build tyres, we build tyres to be regrooved. We put extra rubber underneath the original tread, real tread rubber under the original tread, 7 or 8 millimetres, and that's extra cost. We put an extra strong casing into the product. We wouldn't have to produce it with such a strong casing if it was only going to be used one time. We do it because we expect it to be remoulded 2, 3, even 4 times. That's extra cost we put in, and that adds up to about 20% extra cost we have to put in those products to give those extra lives for the customers. And they're throwing that wine away, they're leaving it on the table. So we really do need to work harder as an industry to try and educate everybody about the benefits of these quite simple things. And that's a great way that we'll be able to reduce the tyres used, reduce the fuel used, because if you improve your pressures or improve regrooving, you can make a 5 or 10% improvement in fuel. 5 or 10% improvement in fuel is an awful lot of CO2 that we can save without having to think about EV and hydrogen vehicles.
Yeah.
So these simple things are certainly part of the story of decarbonisation of mobility. But as an industry, we haven't sold them well enough, and we have to do a much better job of that. So I think that's something that I definitely think that as an industry we need to work on.
That leads me on to tyre disposal. Mm-hmm. Just the other day I saw some horrific scene on social media. Mm-hmm. It was a field in Kuwait somewhere, mm-hmm. with tens of thousands of tyres all burning.
Yeah, yeah.
Surely that's not common practice, is it? How do we in Europe dispose of our tyres?
It isn't common practice in Europe, I'm very happy to say. And I think this is perhaps one of the possible good news stories in our industry. The statistics for Europe, I know them now, there are about, I think it's 96% of all tyres, car and truck and bus, are recycled, are recovered or recycled in Europe today. In the UK, it's about 97-98%. Yesterday, we were quite fortunate. I had a presentation from John Taylor, who's the General Secretary of the Tyre Recovery Association here in the UK, and it's DEFRA that do all the calculations of what the percentages are, and I think it's 97% here. The tyres are going to recycled. They're going to be recycled. In some cases, they're being retreaded, as I mentioned already.
Yeah.
They're being recovered materials, so they're being created into granulates, and those granulates have been used quite successfully in children's playing grounds and also in football pitches, although this is now likely to be banned in the not-too-distant future. We're also seeing the tyres being used as what we call tyre-derived fuel, TDF, to replace carbon in cement factories here in the UK and across the rest of Europe. There is another issue, and John was mentioning this in the presentation yesterday. That's actually Peter Taylor, actually it's not John Taylor, I do apologise, I got his name wrong, but it's Peter Taylor. He was mentioning yesterday that we have a bit of an issue that we're actually exporting what's called dark tyre derived fuel products, and they're full tyres, they're the full car tyres and truck tyres, to a number of countries around the world. And what we're seeing is some of these products are not being recycled, they're being reused. So they're fully worn or damaged tyres that are being put onto vehicles, which obviously is an issue around safety. And then in some cases, they're actually going through a processing approach to try to recover the materials, but which is not environmentally friendly. So certainly I know the TRA are pushing the UK government to say it should be illegal for us to transport used tyres out of the country as a waste. We should only be transporting product, i.e. chrome or steel or the recovered components as a product. Like I think Australia recently did that ban around 2 years ago and it's been very successful. So I think that's the lobby that's happening today. But the good news is we don't burn. We recover 97% across the whole of Europe, but there are some pieces that we need to improve upon. And I think the idea of crumbing before exportation as a fuel is certainly the right idea, and I'd support that as a manufacturer, I think.
Okay. Now, just now you mentioned there's life left in diesel trucks. They're going to be around for a long time. Mm-hmm. But electric trucks are appearing now. Yes. And just the other day, I was in Germany driving that new eActros 600. Mm-hmm. That's 600 kilowatts through that drive axle. How does a tyre cope with that? Are you having to design tyres specifically for electric vehicles?
I'm a bit of a petrol head, I have to admit. I go to Le Mans most years. And I can remember now in 2012, we saw the first hybrid, it was an Audi, come, and he actually won Le Mans that year. And I could not believe the speed of the vehicle, but also the noise it was making. It was whistling past it. I thought, wow, this is completely crazy, like something out of Tron, the film Tron. Nowadays, we've got full EV vehicles that are covering 0 to 60 in 1.3 seconds, I think. Conexa Gomera is the fastest, I think.
Wow.
It's a full EV. And if you put that up against the pedestrian Bugatti Veyron, which I think is 2.5 seconds, that's an internal combustion engine, you can see straight away that EV is killing internal combustion engines in terms of the power, the torque, the speed. And that means that the tyres that are on those vehicles, and already we've got an awful lot of EV cars, we're going to start seeing an awful lot more EV trucks. The reality is that the tyres that are on those trucks have to be specifically manufactured for those EV vehicles, because the EVs are generally 20% heavier because of the battery weight.
Yeah.
They're definitely putting out a hell of a lot more torque than a traditional ICE vehicle. They've also need a lower noise rating. On top of that, they need to have very low rolling resistance, because we don't want to use up all the battery power to overcome tyre rolling resistance. We want the maximum range for a charge. And then on top of that, you also got the usual thing around mileage, and we want maximised mileage. So I would say that EV tyres are probably closer to aircraft tyres than traditional ICE car and truck tyres. And that means that when you're in high performance EV or serious usage of commercial vehicles for EV, you're going to start to see EV specific products. In fact, I mentioned earlier, we're renewing all of our product range, and the very first EV specific product for the truck and bus business, maybe I think in the history in Europe, is going to be launched next month in Solutrans. It's going to be branded as eSmart, which is a scoop. I never mentioned that before. That's the new brand for a Hankook truck EV product, is eSmart. And it'll be a 275/70 urban product, AU56, which will be our very first EV-specific product. Following on from quite a long history of EV-specific car product under the Ion brand name, and also we're using those same EV car products on the Formula E, which covered, when I was in London recently, covered, I think, 0 to 218 kilometres an hour and back to zero again in 368 metres. Indoor land speed record in London during the Formula E a few months ago on Hankook Ion tyres. So that just shows you the performance that you've got going through those tyres. And to do that, you really have to have high quality tyres, high technology tyres, and they're very different from your traditional internal combustion engine vehicle tyres. So we're going to see a proliferation of new products, and they're going to be parallel segments. You'll have your ICE urban product, your regional products, and you'll have your EV urban and regional products, and for us that'll be eSmart.
Now, presumably, electric-specific tyres are going to be dearer than regular tyres.
At the moment, our expectation is they'll probably be around about the same price point. There is an awful lot of discussion at the moment about the rate of wear of tyres on EV vehicles. I'm sure you've seen some press recently where we're seeing wear rates of something like 20% more than you'd see with that same tyre on an ICE vehicle. That's because today most of the tyres that are being tested are actually not EV tyres. When we go towards EV tyres, we need tyres that can cope with the stress and the extra torque, and that means that the wear rate of the tyre has to be improved through material science and also 3D printing. And that means that our expectation is that we shouldn't see a significantly increased wear rate even with an EV product, because the tyre will be specifically manufactured for the EV. The price point should not be significantly different. The overall weight of rubber in terms of kilograms should be similar. Some of the materials within inside will be different, but the overall weight and cost of production for an EV tyre shouldn't be significantly more than a traditional ICE tyre. And if we get the science right, we shouldn't be expecting to remove and replace the tyres as frequently as some of the tests are showing today, because they're not using EV tyres. That also adds to the point around tyre road wear particles, which I know is a big subject of discussion around Europe and also here in the UK. And you can imagine, if we can't solve that issue of the high torque wear rate, by having EV-specific tyres, we're going to see a significant increase in TRWP, because the tyres are wearing that much quicker because they're the extra torque. So that's another issue that we need to get ahead around, and that's why it's important you get the right tyre for the right vehicle. It's why we need EV-specific.
Okay.
And we were the first to do that. We were the first people to bring EV-specific PCR tyres, the Ion range, 2021. I think a few other manufacturers are starting to do that now, and we'll be the first into the market with an EV-specifically designed tyre in November in Solutrans for the truck business.
And did you say electric-specific tyres are quieter as well? Because again, going back to that Mercedes, cruising on the Autobahn, it sounded exactly like a diesel, because most of the noise was coming from the tyres.
Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, I said before, there are different criteria, and one of them is definitely noise. When you're in an EV car today, obviously you don't have the engine noise anymore, and people can hear very, very clearly if you had road roar from the tyres. So all of our Ion range have got sound deadening capabilities to reduce that road noise. And if you do ever get the opportunity to drive an EV with Ion tyres, I'm pretty sure that you'll find it's almost silent. Feels like a Rolls Royce, really. Back in the day, you could almost sit in those things, and it was very silent, and I think that's the case today with Ion. We've got the same technology going into our eSmart range. The first product that we'll launch next month, as I mentioned, in Solutrans, will have sound deadening capability. Because you're right, the EV cars and trucks are very different, particularly trucks. The engine... today in an ICE, you're sitting on the engine, or it's right in front of you, so you've got a lot of engine noise. In the future, all of the noise from the actual motors on an electric vehicle are behind you. They're in the battery packs, which are way back from the cab, so you haven't got any engine noise in the cab from an EV truck, so you can perceive a lot of the road noise. And I'd probably imagine that the tyres that were on that eActros would have probably not been EV specific. In the future, they'll have to be, so that you don't get that issue. And especially for the early adoption, and we mentioned how quickly is it happening, EV? The reality is, in trucks, it's not happening really. It's 1.4% of all trucks in the first two quarters of this year were EV in Europe. Only 1.4%. I think it's about 95% were diesel. In buses, it's happening quicker. I think it's close to 28% were either full EV or battery or hybrids in buses. And in buses, you need quiet, because you've got passengers inside that want to have conversations, and they don't want to be... have that conversation drowned out by the tyre noise. So that product that we'll show in the Solutrans is designed specifically for that very fast emerging EV bus market, and it will mean that those guys and girls in the bus will be able to have a nice quiet conversation, and it'll feel like they're travelling a Rolls Royce, hopefully not travelling in a diesel bus.
So yeah,
that's an innovation that we need to do to try and improve upon the travel experience of the occupants.
Well, there's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah,
it really is.
Yeah.
So Tell me, what's the market like at the moment? What's the European tyre market like?
Well, I've been in this industry for the best part of 30 years, and I would probably say that the market over the last 3 years has been the most challenging time in my career. In 2021, we had COVID hitting us quite hard and the economic impacts of that. Then we had in 2022 very severe shipping issues across the whole of the world, which meant that all the manufacturers were struggling to get materials and struggling to get product to market. And then in 2023, we're actually sitting today with a market that's around minus 20 versus last year in terms of the sell-in volumes for the truck and bus business across the whole of Europe. So that's ETRMA market size. It's been very, very tough this year. We had a pretty tough start. Part of that is because we had a huge backlog of original equipment vehicles, trucks and also trailers, which had been ordered in 21 and 22, but couldn't be delivered because of wiring loom issues and problems with manufacturing by the OEMs. They managed to solve those issues and they managed to deliver an awful lot of those backlog of vehicles in the first quarter and first 5 months of this year. That means a lot of new tyres came on those trucks, so we didn't get any replacements required for the older trucks that would have been there in their place. We also started the year with a lot of dealers with a lot of stock. They purchased a lot of tyres towards the end of 2022, so they had a lot of inventory. Then we also had some issues in terms of the overall economic outlook that people had at the start of this year, where, you know, if we cast our minds back, we just seen the Ukraine-Russian war starting. We saw people recovering from what was quite a serious economic shock through shipping and COVID. Everybody was anticipating that we'd see a recession across the whole of Europe, high interest rates, high energy costs. That didn't actually happen, but there was certainly expectation it was going to happen, and that meant that everybody decided that they would try to economise and reduce tyre use and reduce tyre purchases. So we've had a few months of that where everybody's been trying to economise, and it's only recently started to improve. July was positive versus 2022. August was positive versus 2022 at European level. September was negative, but only slightly negative. So we were at a 24% negative market at the end of around June, but now it's sort of minus 20, and we expect by the end of the year it will probably be around minus 15 to minus 20. So a little bit of recovery year to go, but I have to say it is probably the most difficult market conditions that I've seen in Europe for a whole raft of reasons.
Yeah. You say when times are hard, hauliers tend to economise with tyres. Does that mean buying budget Chinese tyres, or is that a false economy?
Well, I mean, for sure. I mean, we had the import tariff issue, which was applied 5, 6, 7 years ago now. And that meant that the Chinese found it quite difficult to sell economically into the European market for a period. But now we've seen the situation where a lot of those factories that used to be in China are now in Asia. So they're in Vietnam and Thailand, where there is no tariff. Or some of them have actually onshored now and started building factories here in Europe. So Chinese tyres are now readily available back into the marketplace. But if you actually look at the full composition of the market, there isn't a huge growth in terms of what you might call non-ETRMA tyres. What you are seeing is a change in the source of those tyres. Even during the heavy part of the before the tariff, then we used to see 90% of the imports that were non-ETRMA coming from China. Today, the import percentage is probably nearer 10% from China, but we've got the other 90% still in the market, but they're coming from Thailand, they're coming from Vietnam, they're coming from Turkey, they're coming from Egypt. They're coming from Russia prior to the war, so we still had low-cost budget tyres in the market even after the import tariffs were applied for Chinese, but they were less Chinese and many more origins. So if you wanted a budget tyre, you really wouldn't have had a problem getting a budget tyre for the last several years, and we haven't seen a sudden explosion in the use of budget tyres. What we are seeing is a reduction in premium within the ETRMA, where people are making choices to say, okay, I used to buy premium, but I'll perhaps try and buy a tier 2 product. We're seeing some migration from tier 2 into tier 3, and a very small amount of migration from tier 3 in ETRMA into those budget brands. Because you rightly said, I've always said, there's no such thing as a cheap tyre. You can put a budget tyre on your vehicle, but you'll have a mileage compromise, you'll have a fuel compromise. You might have a damage resistance compromise with that tyre. It'll probably be only single use also. It won't be able to be recycled and reused or regrooved or retreaded. And overall, you'll probably find that you fit three or four of those tyres for every premium that you could have fit in its place. And that's been the reality for a very, very long time. And I think, honestly, most of the fleets that we're certainly dealing with have got an understanding. These aren't the passenger car owners who really don't care about tyres. These are professional haulage people. Their haulage is their business. It's their profession. So they take time to understand, is the tyre delivering what I want it to? Is it performing in my fleet? And when we've got people with that kind of awareness and that kind of expectation, then those are the sort of people where you have a chance to be able to explain why it's worth paying perhaps double the price for a Hankook tyre versus a Chinese tyre. And the reality is we deliver much more than double the performance. So that's the way that we've been able to be successful in that what is a really, really tough marketplace for the last 3 years. We've managed to have very, very good success because we've managed to successfully explain that our product performance significantly better than many of our premium competitors, but also significantly better than those other very, very low-cost alternatives.
Okay. You just touched on the tiers then and premium. Now, Hankook has traditionally been a tier 2 supplier, I believe, but I heard a rumour recently that you've just been upgraded to premium. Is that right?
Okay. I don't know where you heard that rumour from, but there's always the jungle drums knocking about in our industry. Officially, Hankook are not able to make any kind of press announcements or documentation, but they has been confirmed. I can confirm what you've heard, and that is that the ETRMA have agreed. Well, the supervisory committee of the ETRMA, which is all of the premium manufacturers in Europe, including Hankook, have all reviewed the position of Hankook in terms of the price position in the market and also all of our performance criteria. And they have agreed that Hankook will be, I think, the first manufacturer to be added to the premium segment of ETRMA in certainly my history, which is almost 30 years. And that will happen officially from the 1st of January 2024. Which we've delayed because we didn't want to expose our sales to all of our competitors. So officially you'll see, if you're observing the ETRMA at UK level or at European level, a sudden significant increase in the size of the premium segment in January of 2024, and that's because our sales will now be recorded and registered for our OE and our replacement TBR truck and bus tyres sales here in Europe. So yeah, it's true. Fantastic. I don't know where you heard it from, but it's true.
Excellent, excellent. And you are the UK market leader, and I believe you have been for quite a few years now. Yeah. What about Europe as a whole?
Yeah, well, first of all, I've spent most of my career working in the UK, and I have to say that Hankook have been a pretty impressive performer. Even in my time in my previous company, I used to watch Hankook and just wonder really how they were managing to achieve what they were achieving. And since joining Hankook, I've been in this company now for 5 years. I'm happy to say that we've managed to improve the performance here in the UK, and today they're definitely the standout leader in terms of market share. So that's fantastic. Overall in Europe, I can say that in the last 3 years, we've grown our market share every year, and this year, very, very significant growth in market share, even in a very tough market. We've got markets around Europe where we're in close to 20% or even more, and we've also got markets in Europe where we've only got single digit market share, so there's still more opportunity for growth. But we're certainly very, very happy with this, the growth in our sales, the growth in our price position, and the growth in our market share. And it's coming because of the point that I made earlier, and that is that we're offering completely new products. I've been 5 years now in this company, and I'm selling today products that nearly all the products I'm selling today were not in the catalogue when I joined Hankook. They're all brand new. They've all got the latest technologies with significantly better performance. And even though we've increased the price quite appreciably for Hankook in that five-year period, we're finding that we've got bigger market demand than the previous generation because we deliver much, much better value. So that's really the background to the success that we've had in Europe. The background to the success here in the UK is a long-standing success, but I think the more recent market share growth is on the back of the much better performing products that we've got, which I genuinely think are benchmark now in the marketplace. So,
you touched on increasing prices there. Mm-hmm. So you becoming a premium tyre supplier, does that mean a licence to increase your prices?
It's difficult to comment on exactly what's going to happen in the future with pricing. Certainly we're not going to say because we're premium we're going to increase our price, and that'd be logical. The reality is that you have to, if you want to become premium, you have to get to a certain price position, because ETRMA are using the sellout position as the key criteria to determine whether you're premium or not. To be in the premium segment of ETRMA, you have to have a sellout position of 80% or higher versus the benchmark in whatever market you're talking about. So if it's UK or France or Germany or Italy or Europe combined, you have to be within 80 to 100% of the sellout position of the benchmark product, which in most marketplaces would be Michelin. So we've had to increase our price position to a position where we are above 80% in all of the markets in Europe, and we've proven we are actually there, if I'm appreciably above that now. Going forward, I can see there are some upward pressures in terms of costs of manufacture of tyres. Raw materials are significantly increasing, because we mentioned earlier raw materials are being changed for alternatives, but today probably 75% of all TBR tyres in the marketplace, including Hankook, are coming from petrochemical derived materials. That means very much oil-based. So if we have an increase in oil costs or energy costs, then that significantly increases tyres very quickly. The raw material costs increase, the cost of processing the raw materials and processing the precursors of the raw materials increases because they're all energy-intensive processes. So I see definitely a potential for oil price increases with some of the Middle East issues that we've got going on in Russia or Ukraine and a few other geopolitical problems. So raw materials are expecting to be increasing. Energy costs are probably going to be increasing as well because of the recovery of the Chinese economy. So I see a bit of a headwind for tyre manufacturers ahead. In saying that, at the moment, there aren't any plans for Hankook to be increasing any of our prices. I think our price, we're happy with our price position, but we'll have to react if we have a significant increase in our input costs, for sure.
So tell me, how much oil actually goes into making a tyre? I'm sure I read a figure once, it was over 20 gallons, is that right?
I've got to be honest, I can't give you an exact figure. I can say that, as I mentioned before, 75% of the products are petrochemical related. So there's an awful lot of oil going into the materials themselves. Then you've got this fact that most of the materials that are produced for tyres needs quite heavy processing, and that is obviously going to be using energy, which is usually coming from fossil fuels. So there's an awful lot of oil used in the actual production of the tyres themselves. It's one of the reasons why the tyre prices are very much linked to oil prices, and the volatility in oil prices has led to quite a few changes in price in the last few years. The reality is that all the manufacturers, and Hankook included, in fact Hankook have got probably the most ambitious objective, which is to become 100% sustainable material by 2050 and 100% decarbonised in terms of production process by 2050. So carbon neutral by 2050. Now, to achieve that is a huge ambition, and we're already partway along the route. We're about 45% sustainable materials today in our products. And we've already got a lot of renewable energies being used in our factories, but we've got a long way to go. But in the future, for sure, the manufacturing process is going to be decarbonised. But the reality is that most of the impact of tyres isn't at the actual production phase or the logistics phase of delivering it to the market, it's at the usage phase. So we need to work as an industry, and we talk about decarbonisation, not only on our products, sustainability, replacing materials, but all decarbonising the carbon footprint of the plants. We need to make sure that we work really hard with the industry to make sure we extract every ounce of value out of the tyres that we build into them to reduce the carbon, to reduce the use of the tyre, reduce the need for new tyres by elongating a life, reuse the tyres where possible. For example, retreading, you can reuse 70% of the raw materials. Well, we obviously had to produce that raw material the first time, we've had to process it using carbon. But if you then reuse that 70%, you're only putting 30% new material onto that product, and you can use that product for almost the same life as a new tyre. So you're reusing an awful lot of the raw material and hence reducing significantly the carbon footprint of that particular product. So these kind of practices, regrooving, retreading, pressure management and everything else, is a real area of opportunity that we have to do better at, because that's the thing that's going to unlock the decarbonisation of our industry.
Yeah.
In fact, we actually... rebranding now all of our sales personnel in Europe. They're becoming what we would call business support managers, and the reason for the change is that we're really trying to refocus our whole team on taking much more of an interest in the whole business of the fleet. So you might have heard in the past, you know, a tyre person turn up at a fleet and the first question they would normally ask, or a dealer they would ask, is how many tyres are you buying, Mr. Fleet? And he would say, I'll buy 1,000. Oh, that's a big fleet. Okay, which product have you got? I've got product A. Okay, well, what would it take for me to convince you to buy 1,000 of my product? It's the sort of way that the dialogue would go. We don't talk like that anymore. We've trained all our guys to go out and look at the vehicles, look at the used tyres in that fleet. You can get a huge vision of how much wine they're leaving in the bottle by looking at those used tyres. You can see tyres aren't regooed. You can see tyres aren't retreaded. You can see the fact they're removing them 7 millimetres. You can see irregular wear. You can see pressure problems. And then we've got a tool that we use where we can actually ask a few simple questions from the fleet and then say, okay, based on what we see, if that's representative of the rest of your 1,000 vehicles, we can save you €200,000 or £200,000 in operating costs by solving these problems. What that will mean is you buy 1,000 tyres today of brand A. If we do a good job of this, you'll probably buy 600 of our tyres, because we're going to reduce significantly the amount of tyres you use, because you're going to regroove them, you're going to pressure manage them, you're not going to be taking them off at 7 millimetres, you're going to retread them, and we're going to manage all that with you with our service provider. And that is what we talk about being a business support manager. Sounds crazy to ask sales guys to sell less tyres, because that's the outcome, but the reality is that's really the key to delivering sustainable and a sustainable partnership where you're delivering consistent value, and that's really what we're about. I want to sell less tyres to all the fleets we work with, but I want a lot more fleets to be used in Hankook. And that's really where I think we're having huge success with the new generation of product and the new approach to market, and also leveraging the real skills our guys have to try and extract all that wine out of the bottle for all the fleets that we're working with in Europe. So that's why they're all called business support managers now, not tyre sales guys, as I was when I was out there, when I was selling tyres a few years back.
You're clearly incredibly passionate about tyres. I'd like to know how it all started, because I'm assuming when you were at school, the careers advisor didn't say, right, you need to be in tyres.
No, that wasn't an option, actually. I mean, funnily enough, I wanted to be a marine biologist. But we're actually sitting here now in Cheshire, and I don't think you can get any further away from the sea here in Cheshire. So I quite quickly realised that probably was going to be a little bit tough. So back when I was in school, and it was quite some time ago now, it was one of those crazy situations where we went to a careers office, and there was basically a pile of girls' jobs on one side of the table, and there was a pile of guys' jobs on the other side of the table. And there was about three piles, I remember. One was for Crew Works, because this is a big engineering area around here, which is the British Rail Engineering Works.
Yeah.
Rolls-Royce, we had Rolls-Royce factory here in Crewe at the time, and then there was another company called Mid and Rollmakers. And I applied to Mid and Rollmakers, so I became an engineer. I didn't want to be an engineer, I wanted to be a marine biologist, as I said. But anyway, I went to engineering, did 4-year apprenticeship with those guys, and then realised that from all the scars and cuts and accidents I had, that wasn't really cut out for that. So I went to university, and then I went travelling for a year, and then I came back and worked for another company for 4 years, and then went travelling again for another year. And then I was lucky enough to join Michelin about when I was probably about 22, 23 years old. And I worked in Michelin as an engineer, originally in the factories, worked my way up through the factories. And they're quite a brave company, Michelin, because they're quite willing to give you a job that you don't have any qualifications in as an opportunity, if you like. So I moved around an awful lot in Michelin. I was working at headquarters for some time, but then I moved into the commercial side of the company, and I went from being a factory manager to becoming a tyre sales guy, carrying the bag, as they would call it. And I can remember my first day, I was actually a sales guy selling tyres in north of Wales, and I walked into up to a dealership that time, and there was a big sign on the door, and there's an English guy selling tyres, and the sign said, "No salesman, no Englishman, no dogs." So I actually knocked on the door and I said, "My name's Guy, I'm an English guy, I'm here from Michelin selling tyres, but the good news is I didn't bring my dog with me." So, but then I got him through the door. But anyway, since then I was involved in a lot of areas in the commercial side of Michelin, and for the last 5 years now I've been working with Hankook, and I have to say I had a fantastic experience. I'm working now and living in Frankfurt, looking after all their European operations for tyres and investments and marketing and sales and distribution, the whole business. So it's a big train set to be playing with, and I have to say the results have been incredible, and the transformation of the company in the last five years has been absolutely incredible as well. But certainly, as you said, it wasn't what I planned to do. I wasn't expecting to have a career in rubber. I was expecting to have a career in neoprene on a beach somewhere studying sharks. So that's always what I wanted to do, be a diver studying sharks. I am a scuba diver, but I never got the chance to actually do a career in that area. But maybe in my retirement, I might be able to take up a bit of marine biology. But it's been a good career, I have to say.
You're also a keen cyclist, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you're an ambassador for Transaid.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably you're going to be doing the Cycle Kenya Challenge, are you, next year?
Yes, I'm doing that, yeah.
Great, so am I. Got any advice for me? other than losing weight, that's an obvious one.
Well, first of all, I'd say I think I've achieved quite a lot in my career and delivered some reasonable results, but I'd say the thing that I'm most proud about is the work that I'm doing with Transaid, and that's been quite long-standing now. I think it's almost 15 years I've been an ambassador or a supporter of Transaid. I can remember the first time I signed up, I wasn't a cyclist at all. I just signed up for something and thought, well, I'll figure out how to do it later. And since then, I think I've done 6 now, or this will be my 6th cycle challenge in Africa.
Wow.
With Transaid. I've done 30 challenges in total. In fact, I've done 7 this year, one of which included some cycling, but mostly running these days. So I've done an awful lot of challenges in the time that I've been with Transaid. And I would say to anybody thinking about joining a challenge with Transaid, or even a challenge for another charity, is, first of all, if you're looking for an adventure, particularly with the Transaid, if you're looking to meet some like-minded people, if you're looking to get fit or stay fit, and also give yourself an opportunity to give back, then there's probably no better option if you're in the mobility industry than putting in a name down for that Kenyan cycle ride in 2024. My advice would be, if you think it sounds like a good idea, first thing you need to do is sign up to do it. Then you need to announce that you're doing it to all your friends and family, because then you're going to be committed to do it, and you're going to be committed to do the training necessary to get ready for it. And then you can worry about how am I going to get ready later. And that's my philosophy in most things. I just sign up for things and then figure out how afterwards. And the reality is when you read the books that come with it or the introductory documents, it'll talk about a cycle distance of probably 350 to 400 kilometres, which sounds immense. You have visions of needing to be a Tour de France rider to be able to complete it. And you know, you've been on one of these rides like myself. The reality is it's short stints of 15 kilometres with a break, with a coffee, with cakes, and then you go off another 15 kilometres riding along with some very interesting people who are riding along with you. And if you see something interesting, then you get to on your bike and you have a conversation or you can take photographs. It's not a race. It's not finished until the last person crosses the line, and it is very much a team effort. So if you are listening and you think that it's beyond you in terms of your physical capability, it isn't. It will need for you to be able to ride 15 kilometres on a bicycle, but that's about all you need to really be able to do. You'll do that multiple times in a day, but it isn't by any means anything like a Tour de France type challenge. And it is a chance to meet some really interesting people, have some really interesting conversations in a place that you never get to see. And also manage to give back to the community. So my advice would be sign up for it, figure out how afterwards. If anyone wants any advice, get in touch with me via a direct message on LinkedIn, and I'm more than happy to give people individual advice on sort of training programs, etc. But just do it. And for you personally, I would say you should invest in a padded seat, because I can remember last time you came, you suffered a little bit, but I'm pretty sure that you'll get round, and you'll get round with a smile on your face as well. And that's certainly what I saw in all the five challenges or six challenges I've done so far. Everybody is smiling, even though at times it is quite tough. And certainly when you cross that finish line at the end, you'll get a rush that you probably never felt in your life before, and you'll make friends for life during those events. I'm still cycling with a lot of the guys I met on the first trip I did, and we all still go on the subsequent trips. I'm actually doing an Ironman next year in Frankfurt with Marcio, who's one of the guys I met during one of the Transaid events. And so yeah, you get friends for life really by going on these events, and you get a chance to give back to an absolutely fantastic charity, which is supporting a lot of communities and finding life-saving support for a lot of communities around solutions around transportation. So as a passionate tire guy or rubber guy or mobility guy, I think it's definitely the right charity to support, and it ticks all the boxes for me. But you look in good shape, so you'll be fine.
Yeah, hopefully I will be by then anyway. Guy, thank you so much. I never thought tires would be that interesting, but that was fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that in all my career, I've been through a whole raft of different jobs, a whole lot of challenges, but I've never seen a situation where there's going to be so much change going forward and so much opportunity for those that have got ambition, those that have got drive, those that have got vision. I think it was Darwin that said it's not the smartest or the strongest that survive in a time of evolution. It's those that are able to adapt or evolve at a pace that's the same or faster than the environment that surrounds them. Now, you are going to have to evolve and adapt very, very fast in the next 3, 4, 5 years if you're in the mobility industry, whether that's as a maker, car, a vehicle maker, a tyre supplier, a service provider, etc. And that evolution is going to throw up some incredible opportunities, some incredible new jobs, some incredible new products, some incredible new stories for the people that are listening to this. So if you're young and you're in the industry, you've got a great future ahead of you. If you're old, you've got a great last few years. And if you're retiring out of the industry, you can observe the industry from afar and see what the hell's going to happen. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be really good. Yeah. The other point I will make quite very quickly is that I think one thing that we haven't done, I've talked a little bit about some of our failures in terms of not being able to sell well enough the merits of some of the simple processes like regrooving. But the other thing that we really haven't done as an industry is been able to explain the importance of mobility as an industry. I remember back in 2000 when we had the fuel blockades because of the Gordon Brown levy on fuel. And all of the hauliers blockaded all of the fuel depots, and within 3 or 4 days we had no food on the shelves, and people weren't able to go to work, people weren't able to go to school, everything ground to a halt with 2 or 3 days. Give us a bit of an idea about the importance of mobility. We had another wake up call during COVID where we would not have survived COVID had it not been for all of those truckers that were trucking the oxygen, the people, the food, the water around the UK when the rest of us were locked in, not able to leave our premises. We were quite happy to go out and clap the nurses, and they deserved that, but we didn't spend any time thinking about those truck drivers. They were keeping us alive. And it's not until you go to an environment like when we was in Africa, where you do find a community that don't have roads, they don't have ambulances, they don't have any means of mobility. And that's when you realise that for us, transportation is like water to a fish. When you're in the water as a fish, they don't realise how important that water is until it's not there anymore. When they're out of that water, they realise, wow, their life's going to be very tough without any water. And we found that, we were reminded of that during COVID, we were reminded of that during the fuel blockade. But unfortunately, I think there's still a lot of people out there that don't understand the importance of truckers. We get a lot of people talking about how trucks are dirty, the trucks are blocking the road. And They don't understand everything that comes by a truck. Like something like 90% of all of products and services these days are delivered through road transportation here in the UK. So I think one thing we need to do better is try and educate everybody about the importance of mobility, because it is an absolutely essential part of our whole economy. And if we're going to thrive as an economy here in the UK after Brexit, then it's going to be the transportation sector that's going to help to drive that. So hopefully we get the chance to talk again in the future, but I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to give some of the messages that I've given. Hopefully it's been interesting for the listeners, but also let's try and work as a group to try and increase the understanding and in terms of the general public about the importance of our industry, because it matters.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you, Guy.
No worries. Thanks, Will.